This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Linz Moser from the Moser family, an Austrian wine producer, but you're also a producer in China.
Yes.
How are you? Are you good?
I'm fine, yes. Just recovered from Corona last week. I'm absolutely fine again. Thank you.
Oh, okay, Corona. Yeah, you don't hear much about Corona. Every now and then people say they've got the flu, so it's almost like just normal flu now, isn't it?
Yeah, it's normal flu, and but my wife is always very meticulous about it, so we took a test, and you know, this red stripe, so it definitely was Corona once a year or every 2 years, whatever, but you know, it doesn't kill you.
Not anymore, anyway.
Not anymore, you're right.
So what I want to talk about today, Linz, is you teamed up with Changi, which is a Chinese producer, to produce the Changi Moser 15.
Yes.
I've had you on the podcast before, and we've talked about Changi Moser in the past, but just let's reiterate what's going on there, and you can just sort of explain the situation. What I really want to talk about today is what's going on in China, because we did our last podcast with you at about 2019 when China was booming. And now things have changed quite a bit. So I just want to understand that. But let's talk about Changi Moser first.
Well, very much to my delight, I can say that Corona is past. I mean, the big pandemic. And we did a lot of new things in our distribution and in our quality work. And people are really listening to us again. So we are looking back to a very, very good 2025 in terms of business, in terms of recognition, and in quality work. So I cannot really complain about our situation at all.
Let's go back into the relationship that you've got with Changi first. From my understanding, the biggest and certainly one of the earliest producers in China.
Yes, that's correct. Changi is the oldest winery of the country, 1892, founded and going from strength to strength. And even now, it's the powerhouse in China by a mile. What I like, it's the most modern company. And it's also a very, very financially sound company as well. Plus, they have visions, they have ideas. And together with our very, very good cooperation for more than 20 years now, I'm delighted to say that we are progressing still at the speed which is breathtaking in almost every aspect. So in terms of strategy, in terms of quality work. And that's something which is very, very important to me as a wine grower, as a wine man, is to bring the specific style of China to the world. Because what's the point in copying the Australians or the Bordelais or the Californians? We like to bring something which is unique to the world, and that's definitely the case from Ningxia with the smallest Cabernet Sauvignon berries in the world, which we cultivate and which we bring into a decent form of wine, which is unique to the world.
You said you've been working with Changi now for 20 years. The brand is Changi Moser 15. I can't remember what the 15 is. I know you told me once.
No, the 15 is 15 generations of Moser family in the wine industry. We date back to 1610. And Changi made us dig up, 15, 12 was not good enough. So my mother had to go to the authorities and dig deeper and deeper. And then we came up with the 15, which is good for my family anyway, because we didn't know it. So Changi made us do this. And so it obviously sticks.
Nice. You've mentioned COVID. And if you look at the sort of history of China, both in terms of consumption and production and imports, it really hit a high mark just before COVID. And then things have been steadily decreasing, both in terms of imported wines into China, but also in terms of production in China as well. So what's been driving that? Because I've been watching it, and you just watch every year China's production volumes, according to the OIV statistics anyway, seem to be coming down.
Over the last couple of years, we gave it a lot of thought ourselves, because that's important to us. But I think it's growing up a wine market. It's not a straight line from here to north. It takes time, and there's a multitude of reasons why China is where it is now. I think to start with, COVID did a lot of changes to the country because of consumption patterns in the on-trade simply stopped. So that's one thing. The other thing is what people always underestimate, there's this huge, giant spirits industry in China with baijiu, and you know the story. The turnover figure of the largest baijiu producer, Moutai, is $20 billion on an EBIT of $10 million. I mean, that says it all. They have deep pockets. Of course, they're suffering now as well. The entire wine industry in China is maybe $5 billion worth or something. And I mean, imports and local production used to be much higher than this figure I just mentioned. It's a power game, and I think we lost that. And economic constraints is the next one. And also, drinking habits have changed because the officials have urged people to change that, and that's been in the news as well. And therefore, I think that to come to a positive notion here, the China wine industry is right in the middle of finding itself or to reinvent itself. And the good news is that the youngsters, females in particular, they're very, very fond of wine. They have traveled to Europe, they've been to the world. Wine is part of a lifestyle, and they want this in China as well. And that's why white wine is really booming now in China. I've just seen the New Zealand statistics to China exports is up this year about 50% over last. Yes, the basis is small, but it's already millions of liters, so it's not small. And therefore, there's a lot of positive vibrations in the Chinese wine market. And I would think that from next year onwards, you will see this also in general consumption patterns.
Okay. Well, let's talk about some of those in a bit more detail. You mentioned the economy in China, and obviously during COVID, there was quite big lockdowns in certain cities anyway for significant periods of time. And obviously China's now pretty much in a trade war with America as well. Are both of those factors, which of those factors do you think is more relevant to the economy there?
I don't think the macro with the trade wars and everything, I leave this to other people because I don't think that's a reason for wine consumption. I think the underlying tone is that people just don't have enough cash to spend anymore against expensive wine. And mind you, wine in China is not cheap. Yeah. So it costs money. It's not like if you go to an Aldi store in Germany and buy a bottle of wine for 1 euro 50. 1 euro 50, and it's drinkable. Yeah. This doesn't exist in China, and therefore I think it's also the economy which had an effect on people. But the youngsters, they're earning their money now, they are on their way up, they enjoy life. And you know, this mantra that 6 o'clock is so much nicer than 5 o'clock in the evening when you had your first glass of whatever, to wind down and everything, I think this is also coming to China now in much, much more. As in the past, especially in the cities, I'm not talking about the countryside, yeah, but in the major cities like Shanghai, in a bustling city, or in Guangzhou, or in the south in Shenzhen or something, people want to enjoy life. It's not just work, 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 which is still the main thing in China, but the youngsters also want to enjoy their bit, and wine tends to be part of this, and that's what people are longing for.
Okay. You talked about that there was some official changes in terms of how people were viewing China. And I understand wine, particularly high-end wines, were very much a premium gifting product in the market. And that sort of is what the Chinese clamped down on that a wee while ago. And that sort of drove down a lot of the sort of super high-end wines. Is that correct?
Yes, that's absolutely correct. Yeah. So this gifting, because in the past, Chinese consumed wine for two main reasons. It was gifting, that was a big thing, yeah. That's why if you go to a supermarket and you have basically wine in gift boxes and not just in regular shelves. So the gift box section of wine is at least or was at least as big as the other one. And then number two, it was social drinking. And both categories are under flak, yeah, that's no doubt, for obvious reasons. And so what's happening right now, as a wine man, I'm quite happy with, because it's a very healthy development of the market, because people are not drinking because they have to give wine away to someone to do something with it or to drink social, you know, this gambé drinking and everything. No, they start to drink wine because they like the beverage and they like the effect of the beverage to them. I think that's a very healthy development. And in this regard, I have very, very high hopes for the Chinese market for the next 10 years.
Okay, let's talk about that shift you mentioned. I've been reading about that as well, that Chinese are moving away from red wines to white wines, and even sparkling wines is starting to become a bit of a trend in China, as opposed to in the old days. I always thought they liked red wine because the Communist Party was about red. I don't know if that's true or not, but it's quite a change, isn't it, moving to from reds to whites, and we're seeing that globally around the world. There's been a move away from red wines and a move more into white wines. I'm not sure why that is, but you mentioned it was maybe to do with younger females. Is that the key driver for that shift from
No,
red to
no, no,
whites?
no. I'm a little bit older, and my grandfather told me already, wine consumption comes in cycles. It's part of a fashion cycle. It's not just from 1 year to the other. No, it's 15 to 20 year cycles, and therefore I've lived through two red and two white wine cycles already in my life, and therefore I think it's a natural shift. And when a market is red heavy to the tune of 90% red when I started in China 20 years ago, then I knew at a certain stage it will definitely have to change to more whites because people get bored with red. Because there's occasions for white wine and there's occasions for red wine and also for rosé. And China was missing this element. And the young people in particular, they just discover white and also rosé and, as you say, sparkling, which is very healthy because they have the whole spectrum of the wine industry. And therefore, I'm also very optimistic that the wine market will develop very, very nicely in the coming years.
You guys very kindly sent us three bottles of wine to try before we did the interview. And I tried the white, the rosé, and the red wine. They're all Cabernet Sauvignon, which was a bit of a surprise because you don't see a lot of white Cabernet Sauvignon and a bit of rosé Cabernet Sauvignon, maybe in the Loire, but not really. Is that an adjustment to your wine offering to reflect the grapes you've currently got in the ground and try and match to the market, or is it something that you've thought was a nice offer?
You know, when I started making wine in 2015, after 10 years in the market, we decided that Lenz is a winemaker and he should be exercising this art or this profession he has as well. And that's why I started. And from day one onwards, I'm very pragmatic and I knew that there will be white wine demand, but at the time, and I still don't have white wine varieties in the ground yet to a larger extent, because COVID of course did halt our plans to plant some white wines in Ningxia, and now we are resuming that after this period. But I still only have basically red wine varieties to play with, and that's to 95% is Cabernet Sauvignon. And therefore I invented together with my great team in Ningxia. It's a really young, energetic, very, very well educated Chinese educated wine team, the White Cabernet. And this is now one of our pillars. It's about one third of our production and sales is White Cabernet. And thank God we have it because we have something white. And that's very, very important. It's not a rosé, but I insist that this is the white wine category. And it tastes also like a white wine. You would never think when you would with eyes closed that this wine is coming from Cabernet Sauvignon.
It's quite a beefy wine, though.
Yep.
It is definitely a beefy wine. It's very much in the sort of, well, it had some phenolics as well. So you've done some skin con. Well, you can't do any skin contact because you
No,
can't, unless you get the
zero, because
gun.
if you do it more than 20 minutes, you have a rosé or a red wine or red. Small berries, they have this abundance of flavor components, yes, but they have also tons of color. And if you release them, with maceration, then there's too much of it.
So do you have to use whole bunches for that?
No, we destem quite normally, but we are fast in our work.
Oh, no. So you harvest whole bunches rather than
Yeah,
machine
of course,
them.
yeah. It's everything is harvested in 25 kilogram bins. And we dumped them into the crusher, and after 25 minutes, 20 minutes, I should even say, the whole thing is done. And I separate the remains to the red wine tanks, which makes my red wines better because of more concentration. And I have this byproduct, if you like, white Cabernet Sauvignon.
All your wines are quite high in alcohol, I noticed. I think they were 14.5% through to 15%. Is that a function of Ningxia? Why are the alcohol so high?
It's basically an effect of global warming, as it happens in all the New World countries at the same time. We are not New World, but we are old New World, if you like. That happens, and we are working to bring the alcohol down, especially in the whites. It's very important to us. But first you always start making a very, very good wine, because mind you, when I started in 2015, wine drinking, even in the area of Ningxia, which we all consider now the Bordeaux or the Napa of China, was not always a gift, exception to the rule, clearly. But wine per se was not the quality we are speaking today. And therefore, 10, 15 wineries altogether started at the same time in a very, very good wine year, 2015, to make decent wine. And ever since, people are starting to listen to us. So that's the period we tried to make very, very good wine to gain world recognition. And now, it's the fine tuning a little bit. Do a lot of things still to be done, but alcohol reduction is one of them.
We've talked about the move to white wines, and you've said you're going to plant up. Are you going to plant up white grape varieties? And if
Yes, for
you,
sure. Yeah, that's the plan.
what's the varieties you'll choose?
That's still up in the air. Of course, I'm Austrian. I'm fighting for Grüner
But that's very cool to moderate climate. And if you're getting 15% Cab Savs, that climate is maybe not matched.
No, it does. You just harvest a little bit earlier. So, we know that Riesling is working in this area. A friend of mine, Crazy Fong from Canaan, she does China's best Riesling, yeah, and it's working there. So I have a high degree of confidence that even Grüner could work. But we know that Chardonnay is working for sure. Sauvignon Blanc is working for sure, and some other white wine grape varieties as well. But give me a couple of months. We have decisive meetings in Q1 of next year in China, and also when we meet again with our Chinese friends at Wine Paris. So we'll definitely come up with a white wine plan for the next 10 years.
Okay, you're not looking at any of the sort of Rhone white varieties like Marsanne or Viognier
No.
or Roussanne, just the classics.
We go for the classics because it might be too much of a stretch to start with something too exotic for the Chinese market at this stage. My partners are very, very good business people. They are very good financial people at the same time. I've learned a lot from them. And therefore, strategy and to combine strategy with economics is something we all can learn from the Chinese.
Sparkling wine and rosé were the other styles that were I have sort of noticed in some literature. Is sparkling wine produced in China? And if so, what styles are sparkling wines? And are you going to look at that as well yourself?
We are not looking at this stage at sparkling, at least not at the Ningxia Winery. We discuss it once a year, but so far no specific plans to be 100% open. But we discuss it also because they're about a stone's throw away from our winery. There's this famous Moët Chandon facility of sparkling. They pump out something like 500,000 bottles of sparkling Méthode Champenoise every year, a white and a delightful rosé from the area, based on Pinot Noir and Chardonnay with their own vineyards. I go there every year when I see them. I know one of the winemakers, and this is really great stuff. So the area is suitable, provided you have the knowledge and the expertise, and the French definitely have. So that's something for the future in China as well. So they can look forward to something great.
You guys are maybe going to be planting up some white grape varieties. You're seeing a move into sparkling and still wines. And also, it looks like the market is maturing in terms of less about gifting and more about just consumption for enjoyment. There's a trend in a lot of places around the world. People often say that the Gen Zs don't drink alcohol as much, but yours seem to be hanging your future on the fact that these people will be drinking your white wines and rosés and things like that in the future. How does that sort of square off with you?
Well, Gen Z is a fact throughout the world, but China is such an immature market. It's in its virgin stages. We were on the fast track in the years up to, let's say, 2015. It's about 10 years from 2005 to 2015, 17, 18 maybe. But it's too early to tell. Mind you, the per capita consumption of China is, I think, 0.3 of a liter or 0.4 of a liter. So I think that's a little bit too much of a look into the crystal ball and too speculative for me. What we're seeing here is you can compare China market with the Nordics in Europe. This was also completely virgin territory. I still recall Sweden having the main importing source was Australia in the 90s. Can you imagine? There was no France, there was no Italy. No, it was Australia because the buyer at the Systembolaget monopoly in Stockholm found that this is the best bang for the buck deal for the Swedes. And so he just started buying and it resonated with consumers. I don't even know what it is today. Maybe it's Chile today, or Italy, one of the two. So it really changed, but it's still a very, very young market, and China is 20 years behind that curve. And therefore, I don't know. My own advice to myself, to our people, is always throw out things and see what sticks at this stage. You don't know, yeah? I mean, people say German Riesling is the latest, yeah, because sweet and with the Chinese foods, perfect. Yeah, of course, now. But is it sustainable? God knows, yeah? The next people say, well, it's Chardonnay. But if I look at the statistics from New Zealand, it's only Sauvignon Blanc being exported. So you don't know. But we'll see in the next 10, 15 years, this market will definitely grow up with Gen Z in particular, which I'm banking really high stakes on it. And therefore, I'm quite positive about the market.
If spirits is such a high consumption product, like baijiu, as you're saying, which is a delightful drink, I like baijiu myself. If it's so important and people are looking for moderation, when you looked at other countries in the world where spirits were quite high, people did move to wine as a way of moderating their consumption. Is that something that you think will happen?
I don't think so because this phase is already over. Because the spirits people, global spirits people, have done an outstanding job to lure people away from the wine industry with their long drinks and their gin and tonics and all these mixes and everything. And their marketing is just better. They spend more money than we do. They have bigger margins than we do. So finally, they came to grips because wine in the 90s and in the 2000s, this was the big thing. Yeah, it was sexy. It was new. And the spirits business, I mean, go to a duty-free store in Frankfurt or in Dubai or wherever. And these guys really know how to market their product. Much, much better than the wine industry. And we sat fat on our laurels. We got saturated. And I think the wine industry needs to reinvent itself a little bit in order to counterattack a little bit. I mean, beer is out of the equation. This is not a sexy drink anymore. But the spirits people, they are really rocking. And they adapt to lower moder to moderation, yes, because we dilute their stuff with Coke and with this tonic water or whatever. And I think they are doing a fine job. So, and don't worry, alcohol will always be consumed because that's in our nature. We grew up with this, yeah, and it's not going to disappear, at least not in your and my lifetime, and your kids and my kids' lifetime neither. So it'll be there. Yes, it's under flak, but don't worry.
All right, Lenz. I think we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much.
Fantastic. All the best. Thank you very much indeed.